This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 MPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of June 29th. I'm John Gibson, and late on a Sunday night with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. I mean, given, you know, that it's long week and it's the end of the week. But, yeah.
You think it's a long week.
I do.
Try being a Oryx Buffalo.
Well, no thank you. I think there's plenty of people who have to be Oryx Buffaloes, and I'm not certain anyone. Well, I know people who would volunteer if they're baseball players and how to work, but otherwise, yeah.
Right. All right. Again, I love that new opening, and I love the new closing as well. So we're happy with that. And as I keep asking people to be safe and be careful and thanking the frontline and essential workers worldwide, the number of COVID-19 cases keeps going up. And we had 60. We hit 60 today in Tokyo with new confirmed cases. So people, don't do anything you don't have to do. Okay. Mask up. Stay home when you can, and let's get this done. We have the answer to the test. We have a test, but we have the answer to the test. We just have to fill it in.
We're failing it because it's the numbers in Japan and in Tokyo are both doubling about every 10 or 12 days.
We're failing, man. Yeah, we are definitely failing. Yeah. All right, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Neftali Soto of the DNA Bay Stars. We're going to talk about the Bay Stars and the Bumbling Buffaloes and a little bit about the CL and the PL and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so a big thanks to the publicity guys with the Bay Stars who helped out a lot and helped us get this telephone interview on Tuesday with Neftali Soto, a third year player from, he came to the Bay Stars from the Reds organization, and he's in his third season with the Bay Stars and back to back home run champ in the CL. He only played 107 games that first season, 2018.
Yes.
Hit 41 home runs.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting because I guess you remember when Ernesto Mejia tied Takeya Nakamura for the home run championship in his first year, and he was the first player to join the team after the start of the season and win a home run title, Ernesto Mejia. I always think that because Soto basically was a, you know, came up in the middle of the season. But he was with the team before that, so he doesn't qualify, but he played very few games. You know, he had a kind of a Coco Ballantyne 2013 looking kind of season where he missed the start of the season and then bam.
Right. And so, yeah, only 107 games, but hit 40 home runs that year. Then in 141 games the following season, he hits 43 home runs. And as I said, won back to back home run titles. And I think this is his fourth appearance on the show. I'm getting old, so I can't remember those numbers all the time. But great guy, and he has been very helpful to the Bay Stars, playing wherever they put him. I really think I like him at first base where he has been, where he played there tonight because Jose Lopez has a bad wheel, so Sunday night. So, and he looked really good at first base. But the other night against the Dragons, I think maybe Thursday or Friday night, he tried to make this play in the hole where he goes to his right and makes this jumping throw across his body back toward first base. And I'm like, who the heck's that? And it's Neftali Soto, and you'll hear why in the interview. He has been able to lose a little bit of weight, he said, during this soft lockdown in Japan. So he's got some work to do to catch Seiya Suzuki of the Carp, who has 5 home runs here early on. But Soto is hitting 360 plus through a week, 9 games now, and into this pandemic hit season. And he has 1 home run and a couple doubles. And he's a great guy, and we enjoy talking to him. So let's take a listen.
Well, all right. Thanks for taking the time today. Appreciate it, man. Okay, so first question, how did you stay in shape over this extended time off? You guys had camp and then spring training and then practice games and then a break. So how did you last and keep yourself in shape?
Well, first of all, I started, since we were not doing much, I started eating better at home and trying to stay in shape, man, trying to work out at home. I bought a spinning bike, so I was running my every day and trying to stay healthy.
Wow, that sounds like you made an investment, so that's cool.
Yeah, definitely was an investment.
Was it here in Japan, or did you get one from overseas?
No, it was here.
Okay.
I got it from here, yeah.
And it must have been expensive. All right. Well, you know, obviously this is the first time for any of us alive to experience something like this, and definitely the first time for NPB and the entire sports world. So how did you feel on Friday when you were finally out there on the field playing a game?
Man, I was so excited. I was like, because you worked so hard the off season, you worked hard in Okinawa, and then that should happen. It's crazy how it is, but nothing you can do. So I was just excited and happy that finally we, even with no fans, but we still playing. We were still playing, so that's a plus.
What was going through your head and your heart when you were standing out there and that first pitch was thrown?
Man, it was like when you're a kid, you know, like when you start playing, that you're anxious, you're nervous. That first pitch, you know, you're like, the day before I was thinking about it, like it's always the same feeling, you know, like when you start playing and when you're little, I still feel the same thing every time I go to play. So it was definitely emotional.
Yeah, and even with, you know, no fans, a lot of people are talking about the fact that there aren't fans, and the practice games and the spring training games were different because they didn't have the same meaning. So how was that different for an actual regular season game?
It's hard to play without fans. It's kind of tough because you get into the game more, I feel, with the fans. And, like, they give you more energy to carry out for the game.
Right, right.
So it's kind of weird, man. It's weird. It's like you're all over, like, you got to concentrate and all that and think that everybody's watching on TV. It's not there. You know?
Right, I know. Well, I don't know, but I was there for one of the practice games earlier in the season, and it's so quiet. It's, you know, the guys on the bench do a good job of keeping the energy up, so that's good. So the experts, you know, the former players who are now commentators on TV and radio, they have your team finishing anywhere from the top to about fifth place. So what do you see in the Bay Stars this season?
I mean, we got a great team. So shorter season, so we have to produce quick. It's hot outside and it's all that, but we got to go after. I think we got a great team to be in the playoffs, and if we're healthy all year round. And all the guys do their job, I think we got a chance to win the division.
Right, and there's no playoffs this season. And, you know, for me, a lot of the teams seem close. Like, your team seems like it has a lot of ability to score runs. Some of the other teams seem to be better pitching teams. So what's going to push you guys into the postseason and into the Japan Series?
I mean, it's a combination. I can't, like... Everybody needs to do their job because, I mean, if the pitchers do their job and they're great this year, but we don't score, we're still going to have problems. So it's going to be a combination of both, you know. I know our team is a good hitting team, and so if we combine that with the good pitchers we got this year and we keep improving in our defense and everything, the small details of the baseball, I think we got a chance.
Yeah, you know, I figured you were going to say that, but I'm obligated to ask that question. And of course, yeah, the hitting is something that we can obviously see, and you guys had that great comeback on Sunday to win that last game in the series. And what do you think? Like you said, the season is shorter, so what's the impact for you as a guy who had to spend all this time doing nothing, and then suddenly you have a shorter season and the games have a little bit more impact if you have a rally like that or if you lose a game like that? So
it's definitely some pressure, you know, because you gotta produce right after, like right at it. You gotta go right at it every game, and the team expect you a lot from you, like for me and from all the guys here. So, but it's good that we came through in the last inning, and I feel like that's a push we needed for this couple series we get at home now.
Yeah. Now, what about the situation with the rule, the 5 import rule and the 10 inning rule? First, the 10 inning rule. You guys seem to be able to shorten the game in that respect, so that shortens the bullpen, and then I think it just makes the managers maybe want to do something earlier in the game, maybe start up the engines, get the bases going, get the running on the bases going a little bit earlier. How do you guys see that short inning or 10 inning rule affecting the game?
I mean, sure, we're going to try to do our best to score early in the game and be more aggressive, because I mean, it's only 10 innings, but it's tough, at least for me, for us players, not that tough, but for managers and coaches, it's kind of tough, because I mean, they have to react a lot sooner and get players ready to just try to score early and try to win the games early, you know.
Now, what about the 5, you know, import player rule? Now, I know only 4 guys are going to dress for any particular game, but how does that impact things with the roster?
Man, it's good. I mean, we got at least in our team, we got the situation, we got a starter on that role, so it's good. Everything with, that helps the team is good. I think the five. Guys, I think they're helping the team.
All right, so last question, and then we'll let you go for the day, and good luck tonight. Getting back to the empty stadiums now, the one thing that that left an impression on me when I was at the game wasn't necessarily the fact that there wasn't a lot going on. It was the fact that every foul ball and every home run just hit the seats and made that sound that you hear during batting practice, that even during batting practice you can't hear it that well because there's music blasting a lot of times and there's just a lot going on in the stadiums and other guys batting. So how did you absorb that atmosphere as you went through the games this past weekend? Because I'm sure every game was different.
It's true. Like, actually with no fans, you can hear it. Everything. You can hear the coaches, you can hear the bench, everything. The balls sound different. And the good thing is, when you hit it good, you know you hit it good. Not only the feeling, but the sound of it, it's a different experience.
What left an impression on you?
It's different. It's just different. I mean, you concentrate more on the game because there's no fans. There's no outside like this. The yelling, the fans hearing the fans chanting your song the whole way.
Right.
So it's more of a mental game. It's just tough. It's just tough because you're used to the fans. You're used to having fun and react with the fans. Now you just like gotta push each other to try to create that same feeling, and that's why our team is pretty good. It's pretty good at doing that because we stay together and we gave each other the chance to just like push ourselves in that situation, you know?
Okay. All right, man. Our time's up. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and good luck, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, so eat better, get a spinning bike. Those are the keys to staying in shape during a lockdown, Jim.
I'm okay.
You're all over it.
I am indeed. I'm on it. Give it to my wife, and she'll put it on the things that she wants to order me to do.
Hashtag.
There you go.
So,
well, you know, I appreciate hearing that he was excited, but simultaneously it was difficult to pump himself up because there are no fans there at the games. But what did you take away from the chat?
Well, what I would like to say is that I really enjoyed it, and I think that you two had this nice thing going where it's not the gym kind of interview where I'm looking for certain things and I get them and I check the box and move on, and sometimes mm-hmm. I forget to ask the question and so on. But
and so on. I like to sneak that in there.
And so on and so forth. But you kept going back to the fans. And that was really good because we got the end product of that repeated questions, but what about the fans? But what about the fans? And produced this kind of cubist image of what it's like to play in these games, you know, kind of a 3D image. So, you know, at the plate, in the stadium, you know, what the seats, you know, the bowl sounds like hitting the seats and,
right.
You know, and the emotion and the distraction and the energy and the weirdness and the excitement. It was just wonderful. I mean, I just thought that was the whole best part was this little virtual reality tour of playing baseball with no fans.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So I enjoyed that. I don't have anything to add to it. Except I guess the hard part is understanding how the fans' dynamic works to, and I understand what it is to some degree. You know, we hear it, but
I'm sorry, when you say we hear it, I think I know what you mean. Is we hear the fans screaming?
We hear
okay,
the fans chanting, you know, the whole game and singing and making noise the whole game, but most of the players kind of, you know, I think they can enjoy it on an abstract level when they're not competing. So when they're on the bench, they probably hear it. When they're warming up, they hear it. But once they're in the batter's box, I think most of the point is to block it out. You know?
Exactly, exactly. That was going to be one of my points is because we hear the boilerplate hero interviews all the time after games, right? The cheering fans help carry the ball out of the park, or you fans are the best in the world or the best in Japan or whatever they want to say. I mean,
that's right.
It just seems like that's worked into that.
Ichiban desu.
What's that?
Hanshin fans wa Ichiban desu. I don't remember. He used to say that all the time, but it.
And Trey Hillman used to say that. Bobby used to say, I mean, it just seems like it's part of their contract. Like before they sign the contract at the bottom, all the players have to say, and you know, this is your line. Always thank the fans, and you know that's the first thing you do.
Well, they always. Of course, the last question. You know, the last question in the hero interview is always, "What do you have to say to the fans?"
Well, it's not a question. Yeah, it's an order.
Exactly. It is indeed. Say something about the fans that positive, or you won't get your fight money tonight. Oh, I'm sorry. We're not supposed to talk about fight money. It doesn't exist.
Pardon. Right, fight club. Don't talk about fight club.
Fight money because it's something that is non-existent.
Okay. So most of the players spend much of the time trying to block that stuff out, okay, trying to keep themselves calm, block out whether they're cheering fans at home or whether they're booing fans on the road. The thing that you have to do is try to lock down control the adrenaline, calm yourself down, get in the batter's box or make the pitch or whatever it is. I don't think the fielders have so much trouble with it, but they can hear all that stuff they hear, but they're trying to block it out. And now it's not there, and they've trained themselves so well to block it out that now they're hearing everything, and now they have to try to block that out, but it's so weird that it takes time. And I was thinking that the dynamic with young players versus veterans,
mm-hmm.
because now we have these young players who basically, some of them probably are more used to playing in this environment than the veteran guys.
We talked about, I talked about that in the spring with some people, you know, some players, and I'm trying to remember who it was. I want to say it's Yuhei Nakamura.
Nakamura, okay.
And he said, even on the farm team, even on the day game for the farm team, there'll be one guy pounding the drum, one guy waving a flag, and two or three people shouting from left field. You can hear them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you do hear the coaches. I mean, I've been to those weekday Eastern League games at Cebu Dome, 20.
Or the Cebu Dome backyard, yeah.
23 yeah, years. No, actually, I saw him playing at Cebu Dome a few times.
Okay, I've been in the backyard.
23 years I've been there too, but, there'd be three guys cheering on the Bay Stars. But you heard the coaches complaining to the umpires, you heard the coaches, the players encouraging each other. It's different. It's a different environment, but you still heard the cheers. I mean, they're still there. They're quieter. They're muted for the visiting team, but you still heard them.
Sure. And what I was getting at is if you're a young player, you're not used to the huge crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You're more used to the quieter situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you can almost equate that with the guys on the bench because they're certainly not banging drums, but they're screaming and yelling on the bench and, things are going on. So I thought that's an interesting dynamic that we see that maybe some of the young pitchers or some of the young players and rookies are doing well because they don't have to go through that. And they're just getting up there and doing what they've always done because it's not that environment.
Of course they have the other dynamic of if I don't execute this pitch, I'm going to be back to the farm team where it's even quieter tomorrow.
certainly. But I think you also have the batters who have come through. I think I've just been seeing a lot of young players do fairly well on both sides with the pitching and the hitting. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. And, I liked the way Naftali talked about the import rule. And he said, one of our fourth guys, or essentially one of the fifth guys, is a starting pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting because now a starting pitcher can throw and he can travel with the team, but he's obviously not going to dress for any of the other games during the week. So he can be on the roster, just not dress
spot. Dressing on the farm team from tomorrow. So,
Michael Peoples?
Mm-hmm.
He was deactivated right away. Yeah. Okay. But I mean, that's an advantage and, I thought that really works out well for the Bay Stars. Somehow they struggle with the speed game. And I was thinking the other day that it seems like a lot of teams now, they just have that one jackrabbit they can bring off the bench because these games of 10 innings, it really limits the kind of, I thought 12 innings was a restriction, but 10 innings, if you know you're only going 10 innings, you really have freedom as a manager to start using pitchers earlier and start making moves with some of the other players earlier because you don't have to worry about going into those later, those extra 11th and 12th innings. And so I thought that was an interesting thing, but I don't really know anybody. Maybe Michael Westbay can help us out with the jackrabbit on the Bay Stars who could come in and just improve that speed game late in the game because,
Yeah, it's pretty much after Otosaka, they're out of guys who are even moderately fast.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I guess Tabata's, he's okay. I mean, if he's got some guys with better than average speed, but nobody with electric speed, I don't think.
Right. And
of course, to be honest, in Japan, there aren't a lot of guys with electric speed to begin with, but that's another story.
Well, yeah, but every team seems to, a lot of the other teams, have that guy now who really can run.
True. I mean, I think also, a lot of teams try to, that people emulate success and the guy who loves, the guy who loves his pinch runners, as much as he loves, cake on his birthday is the Tatsunori Hara. I mean, the guy, the guy, when he was manager of the All-Star team, he put a pinch runner on the All-Star team, so for Christ's sakes.
Right, yeah, yeah. I guess Kazuki Kamisato is one of the guys who's pretty fast, but I don't think he's a jackrabbit.
No, he's a fast outfielder. He's a faster than average. He's got... I don't think he's got 70 speed, but maybe 60.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad you liked the interview and the fact that, I was talking about that whole atmosphere. And, I actually did a story during the week using Neftali Soto's comments and talking about that. And I thought, it was really nice the way he captured the situation where you can hear so much more and how the ball even sounds different coming off the bat.
Yeah.
Because like I was saying, in batting practice, and you've been at these situations as well, there's music blasting, there are people talking, the reporters are all gathered around, a significant distance from the batting cages themselves, but still enough that if we're talking, it just creates ambient noise for all these guys. So the ball sounds different coming off the bat. And I just like the way he captured all that stuff and gave it to us. So, yeah. So really fun to talk to him. So let's transition and talk about the Bay Stars a little bit now. They look good here at the start. Of course, they got a Dragons team that probably was, I don't know. I don't know how to describe that team right now because I last year we were talking and I think I tweeted out about the fact that the Dragons had led the league in hitting and in hits and had the, just had struggled to score runs and finish things off. And so they had a similar an entire series like that against Yokohama, which they flooded the bases but couldn't knock anybody in. And meanwhile, the Bay Stars, I'm looking at this team and I'm looking at this lineup and I just see it's hard to judge. And remember, we had the question last week about Adam Jones, is he going to be good or bad? And I said, look, you get guys who have success in the spring or whatever, the preseason, and then when you get to the real season, they don't hit. And Tyler Austin, I mean, the moment he stepped off the plane in Japan, he has been raking, and there are no more leaves left. I think he's the real deal.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not certain he's knows he's still in Japan. I think he's still wherever he's most – he's in whatever environment he's most comfortable hitting in.
He's in a hitting zone.
Now, provided the right field wall is not too close, but yeah.
No, did you see that play? The ball hit him in the head.
I did see that.
So he went back to catch, and the ball bounced off the wall and into the head. I thought the same thing. I thought that maybe his head hit the wall.
He landed awkwardly.
So, but there's two things about Tyler that I really like, and one of them is, and I know Justin Bour with the Hanshin Tigers has had his struggles early on and had the, what was it, he went 19 plate appearances before he got a hit.
Like 18, but that's okay. But something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something 18 or 19. But he's got a hitch, Justin does, and he's got a bat that's moving all over the place. And the thing about Tyler, he's got a little bit of bat movement, but he's pretty quiet up there. Yeah. His feet are not moving. His head's not moving. The bat's not moving too much, and he's really good at attacking mistakes because he can react late to them, so he takes them the other way, and then he can get to pitches that if he's sitting on a pitch, and remember the Craig Bizell kind of school of hitting where he's looking for a certain pitch and he gets it, it doesn't really matter what part of the zone it's around, he can get to it, and it just seems like
that's because Craig pretty much didn't like seeing anything in the zone. He figured they're not going to throw me strikes, so I'm looking for the ones around.
Right. So I like what he's doing. Keita Sano, I heard an explanation. I was watching TV, and maybe I was listening to the radio. I can't remember which game it was, but I think it was Kazuhiro Sasaki who said or explained why Sano is batting fourth. He said, Ramirez, because obviously we can't talk to the manager anymore, so we have to listen to the color analysts and relay their stories. And basically he was saying, well, if you put a guy like Sano in between Tyler Austin and Jose Lopez, good things will happen for Sano, basically. And it's been happening. I mean, Sano, he didn't drive in a run, his first run, until I guess maybe that second game against Chunichi in that series. But he's hitting almost, I think he's hitting every game. Yeah, he's hitting 9 consecutive games so to start the season. So he's getting hits. He's driving in enough. And that lineup, like I said, the most dynamic lineup, I think it's almost ready to challenge the Seibu Lions as the second best lineup in Japan. And that's, you know, pending the Hawks getting back their Cuban players. But at the moment, I would say they certainly have a dynamic lineup. And just that part of it looks like fun. But just like Neftali said, the pitching has to do well, and the guys have to play defense as well. And they've been able to do that as well. I mean, Yamato Maeda made a great play, and I think it was the opening game of the series against Shinichi, and helped keep them at bay so that the Bay Stars could come away with a win in that game. And you look at the pitching, the back half of the rotation guys that I saw, Shoichi Ino, Haruhiro Hamaguchi, and the rookie, Yuya Sakamoto. Those guys pitch really well. All three of them. I mean, I don't think Ino, I think they got more out of Ino than they were maybe expecting. With Hamaguchi, I think they just wanted to see how much they could squeeze out of him, but he won his game. And Sakamoto had pitched, I don't know, no hit pitching for 5 innings against the Dragons and gave up a hit in the 6th inning. And then, Kentaro Taira tonight against, Hanshin was really good.
Oh, he had 2 games in a row where, I mean, I didn't see the first game, but he had 2 games in a row where he allowed a run over 6 innings. So that's a nice start.
Yeah, it's a really good start. And so, yeah, I like this team. It's a good start. But of course, yeah, I expected everything to be really tight. We're getting some separation early on here because a couple of teams like the Dragons and the Tigers are just kind of stumbling and bumbling around. But I still think it's going to be tight in the end, from top to bottom. But yeah, just a little bit of separation at the moment.
Well, okay. I mean, you know, everybody has some weak spots. I mean, I do love Keita Sano. I've seen, of course, I saw him play last year, and I thought he would have, I knew what he'd done on the farm, and I thought this is a guy who could probably hit really well,
mm-hmm.
you know, without really seeing much of him. And obviously, if Ramirez is making him the captain, he's not doing it because the guy's a dud, you know, because, you know, he gave him a big envelope at Christmas or anything. So I think, when I watch him hit, you know, I see a guy who's also like Tyler Ross, who's very quiet and poised at the plate. He is not given anything away. You know, he's not opening up any unnatural holes in his swing. You know, I guess probably the only issue for the Bay Stars is their outfield defense.
Right.
With Tyler Austin and right and Sano and left. And they're not fast. And so that's going to be an issue. But of course, if you're scoring 8 runs a game, then no problem. The other thing that has, I've enjoyed is how good, well, I knew, first of all, I wasn't down on Spencer Patton last year. Basically he pitched, his problem was that it's like all of the places where he mis-executed happened to be very costly, and then throw in some bad luck, and you've got the nightmare on, you know, at Kanai Station. Instead,
right, but basically his numbers were the same, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it was a really, you know, a sort of like he did many things right, but everything went wrong kind of season.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looked, I've watched a couple of their games since the start of the season, and I've seen a guy who just really is in control and in command of what he's doing out there. And that was good. Of course, the other one is the exception, and I've only seen the one game on Saturday that he blew. I mean, I saw that he left the bases loaded the game before. Yasuaki Yamasaki is having one of his little fits or episodes where he goes through these phases where he's just, you wonder what the heck is this guy doing? And I don't answer. And I know Alex Ramirez is, you know, believes in him, which is what you do. You believe in your guys who got you there until you have reason not to.
Right.
But he didn't look good on on Saturday, and they didn't need him on Sunday, so we'll see. But that's, you know, that's something that'll come. I don't think he's lost, and just because he's had a couple of bad games and looked really awful or appeared really awful, I mean, that doesn't mean he is awful.
I agree, and I think, I honestly, to me, it would seem that if you're a bullpen pitcher, that being the closer has to be the hardest situation to replicate in practice situations leading up to the season starting, and that a lot of guys seem to be off and on early this first week. And obviously this was into the second week when Yamasaki gave up the home run to Jerry Sands and against Hanshin on Saturday. But yeah, I totally understand. I think, you know, some guys, as we talked about, I think we spoke about it last week, in that I heard someone say some guys spent a lot of this extended break time working harder and other guys didn't. And I think there's just a gap. And I think we're going to have to make up, we're going to see that gap made up slowly, where some of these guys who seem to be, like, say, a Suzuki, seem to be in midseason form are going to maybe remain there. And some of the other guys who are in preseason form are going to catch up over time, and everybody's just different.
I think another thing is that some of the teams didn't all have the same amount of practice opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Because of where their teams were in relation to when the state of emergency was lifted in their area. I mean, the Carp were out there practicing when the Giants and, you know, the teams in the Kanto area weren't.
Excellent point.
So, you know, everything's different. And also, as we remember, you know, at the start of the, I remember when Zach Neal said, and he said it a couple, I don't know if he said it on our show or he said it before the show, that during the freeze out or whatever, he was going into kind of a extended off season. You know, where he was doing things that he couldn't normally do in spring training, building up physical strength. You know, it's sort of like things you do before spring training. And I think that I don't want to say some people worked harder and some people didn't, although that's a natural part of life. Everybody works differently. Everybody gets different results. But I suspect part of it was that some people were looking at the longer picture,
mm-hmm.
in terms of adding, you know, working on a new pitch and, you know, building strength as opposed to being ready for the opening bell.
Right.
Okay. So I think different approaches more than, you know, different intensity.
Yeah. I mean, just a lot of difference, because I think obviously the teams weren't, when you have your players, you can, as Shige Kazumori, the former Dragons pitching coach and then, manager, he said, look, we get all the players together and we tell them their individual workouts or their group workouts. And then there are some guys who do some extra, or some guys who, if they think you're not looking, don't finish the program or don't finish the routine. You know, so everybody's going to be different. Mm-hmm. And when you have all the players together and you can control their environment, it's easy to know and see what they're doing. But when you just giving them an assignment over the internet and say, okay, let's do this, or you need to do this, you can't monitor. So, yeah, it's natural that everybody's at different places, and I think it's going to come together as we move along through the season. Mm. But it has been fun, and obviously it has been fun for the Hiroshima Carp. They're off to a decent start. They kind of stumbled in one series, but they won 2 out of 3 this past weekend at Nagoya's Dome, and Seiya Suzuki hit 2 home runs in the opener. That he didn't do much after that, but I think what we really want to talk about is the pitching, because the Carp, that was one of the reasons I picked them to finish in last place in the Central League. It's not over, folks. It's not over. But I just said my question was,
they might not have any healthy arms after 3 weeks.
As we get to that tier,
keeps going at it.
Right. And so I said, I just don't know who. Well, who is Daichi Osara seems to be blossoming under a manager who is a former pitcher. I think his past 2 managers were not pitchers. And I think that might be making a difference with him a little bit, because he seems to have made a jump to elite pitcher with 2 complete games to start the season. And he's one of the pitchers I love from the moment I saw him. And I think I think you weren't as high on him as I was, and I thought this guy is going to be great. And then he just wasn't those first 3 years, and then he has gradually gotten better. And, yeah, he's gotten to elite level all of a sudden, it looks like. And then the rookie today, Masato Morishita, pitched really well, and he beat the Dragons. So, but you were concerned about the pitch counts for both of those guys.
Yeah, well, first of all, they both pitched really well in Yokohama. And they were very efficient. Now, Morishita in Yokohama threw seven scoreless innings, and Osera went the distance. But I think he went the distance in like 110 pitches or something, so no big deal, and didn't allow hardly any base runners. So it was really smooth. And then they get into Nagoya, and Osera is not as sharp. And he's throwing a lot more pitches. And here he is, another complete game, 132 pitches. And he's not smooth. But, you know, so I'm going, wait a second. You know, it makes sense that the guy's got 110 pitches, but are you telling me that this is, you know, this is okay? And then on Sunday, it's Morishita out there, and he's got, in fact, 110 pitches when he finishes the eighth inning. Now, when he finishes the eighth inning, he's basically thrown 15 scoreless innings with pretty much nothing. He had one tough inning in Nagoya on early inning where he walked a couple of guys. I think he had the bases loaded with two outs, and that was really the only real danger he had. And then he gets to the ninth inning, and it's 110 pitches, and they're leading like 200 to nothing. And and the manager's thinking like, and Sasaoka says, well, gee, let's see how many more pitches I can make him throw in the ninth inning. I mean, it's like, I'm just going, and I remember, and I don't get it, because Sasaoka wasn't quite the poster boy for, you know, he wasn't even nearly the poster boy for excessive pitch counts and complete games in the early 90s. But he's a guy who kept the carp at that time when they would burn out their starters and then say, okay, now you're the closer. And when the guy's arm recovered from, you know, getting a lot of rest in the bullpen, they'd throw him back in the starting rotation. They ran through two or three of these guys after their previous closer died of cancer. So they kept throwing their ace pitcher into the bullpen. So the three of them. And Sasaoka went through this grind, and maybe he thinks it's normal. I mean, he threw 66 career complete games, and he was really only a starter for about 4 years.
All right. Well, I mean, I can totally understand it. And here's where I'm coming from is.
Yeah. Tell me where like you're I said, coming from, because I don't his manager, get it at all.
His manager is a pitcher.
Right.
And this is his second start. This is Morishita's second start. And his first start was lost by the bullpen.
Right.
He threw seven innings, and then they blew it in the ninth inning. Okay. Right. So he saw his first win get erased, and they're up 10-0. And I think Sasaoka was thinking, okay, well, let's give him a chance to close it out himself since we've got a big cushion. So I could see that. But I think once he started to put guys on base and he started looking tired, I think he should have been taken out, but they didn't take him out.
Probably Sasaoka didn't have somebody warming up when he went out there, which would have been a use, especially because it's Sunday. You don't
correct
guy. So maybe it was that. Maybe it was just inexperience as manager. Sometimes if you're the pitching coach, the manager, you know, you can give the guy suggestions, but if you're the manager and you're a former pitcher, maybe the pitching coach is your former assistant is hesitant about giving you advice.
Possibly, but I mean, the bullpen hasn't been that good either.
No.
It hasn't been steady.
Okay, 10 runs, okay.
But he had a shutout going.
He's
a former pitcher. That's what I'm thinking. He's a former pitcher.
Well, that's so important in the big thing.
I know, but I'm just telling you where I thought he was.
I understand. The guy's psychologically damaged from playing years in Japanese baseball. It'll kill you. And I love Sasaoka. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it was the nicotine that got to his brain or anything. Okay, I'm going to shut up before I find better versions to cast on him. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, I kind of understood the philosophy about sending him out there. I don't know about leaving him out there. But, yeah, and Osada as well, I thought, okay, the Dragons are set up in a situation. They had a guy who had a home run and a hit, and he was running the bases, and he pitched a complete game last time. You know, pitchers aren't used to this, and they'll be able to take advantage of that. And they couldn't do anything with him. He pitched a complete game against them as well. And
I can understand keeping Osada in and Friday, if only because he's their best hitter.
Yeah, that's true. He's got probably the best batting average.
Kravin, he's got like a 600 or 700 on base percentage.
Yeah. Right. He had two hits, including the home run in the opener, and he had two hits.
He's got
Dragons.
Three runs scored, three RBIs, four hits. The only thing he doesn't have is a bunch of walks. He's got a sacrifice. Okay.
Well, because he's too busy hitting. Why strikes go by when you can whack him?
Walking won't get you out of the pitching rotation.
Right.
Or will.
So, yeah. So, yeah, the Carp look pretty good, and the Hanshin Tigers are having their issues along with – I mean, you know, the Swallows, I thought they were going to score runs, and I thought they were going to be pretty good, and they did give the Giants a run for the money, taking one game out of that series from them with the bats, the Tetsuto Yamada Grand Slam game in the middle of that series. But both of those teams just stumbling a little bit. I get the feeling that the Swallows are going to be around 500 and they're going to be really good sometimes, and then they're going to run out of pitching and be really mediocre other times. But
I mean, they've got the catch basement for the Hiroki Yamadas of the world. I mean, this is a guy who just is I'm in awe of, because he can still pitch, you know, after years of, you know, abuse to his arm and never really having success with SoftBank, and a guy really did nothing for year after year after year, and he comes back to Swallows and he's really giving it, you know, he's giving it the old college try, and he pitched pretty well on the first week, you know, the first Sunday of the season, and he didn't pitch very well. He didn't get good results today, but darn, you know, he's out there trying, and you know, you'd like him to have somebody better, but. They don't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But, you don't. Yeah. Well, and speaking of somebody better, I was thinking about the Tigers and the Dragons, and I was thinking Yudai Ohno, Yuki Nishi, those are not guys I would think who are ace level. They're pretty comparable. One's a lefty and one's a righty, but both have had at least one really strong statistical season. Both have been opening day starters more than once. Both have no hitters. But I don't know that they're ace level. I just, you know, it's Ace Friday, and I was thinking, you know, we got really good pitchers throwing on this day, and then we got Yuki Nishi and Yudai Ohno. I don't see
Ohno enough. I've seen Nishi a lot, and he's a very – he knows how to pitch.
He's up and down.
He is up and down. His command is inconsistent. His movement is inconsistent. But he has good pitches, and when they're there, he knows what to do with them. And even on the second Friday, I was very impressed with what he did with very little.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows what he's doing, and he can beat you. I remember with Oryx, he went through these streaks, I think in 2015, where his results made him look like the best pitcher in the world for an 8 or 9 game winning streak, and he was just untouchable. But, you know, and then he had kind of a Kohei Arihara 2019 kind of vibe to it. Which was people caught up with what he was doing, and he wasn't able to maintain it, and it didn't work out. But it's, yeah, he's inconsistent. But he does give you the look, and he seems to be very poised. So I like that. I think Ohno, too, is a very poised pitcher. And you know, I guess.
Yeah, whatever. They're just not ace level. I'm hoping the Dragons can get.
They don't have the quantity and the quality of the ace stuff, I think, is the thing that you're getting.
The Dragons can get Shinnosuke Ogasawara out there as quickly as possible, because I think I was thinking he was going to be their best pitcher this year, and I'm hoping he can get out there quickly. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the Pacific League. And, yeah, all right, you know, I sent out the tweet. I said, come with it. Come with it. Bring it on, Twitter. I opened my big mouth, talked to Jason, and said no team is going to be swept in these six games, these unprecedented six-game series that the Pacific League has put together this season amid the COVID-19 outbreak and the pandemic and everything, and they're trying to limit travel. And so let's play six games at one venue. I said it couldn't be done, and it only took one weekend, the first six-game series in the history of MPB, basically scheduled ones, and the Orange Buffalo stepped up and fell down.
They rose to the challenge. Well, first of all, John, don't feel bad, because if at least once a year you don't make a bold assertion that's completely unsubstantiated or backed by evidence, then I'm done. I'm finished. I'm out of here. So go for it. And okay, you got it out of the way early.
Very early. And I tweeted me and my big mouth. And yeah, I didn't even think. You know, someone sent me a very nice tweet. It said, you should have said that with the caveat, except for the Oryx Buffaloes, and then you would have been fine. And I'm I didn't even think the Buffaloes could do this.
I didn't think so either, because I just, you know, this week was in some ways kind of Oryx in microcosm. I mean, you saw them in games, and you saw them in games they were winning, and then you suddenly saw them finding ways to not win. You know, and I they did run into kind of a, and I'll tell you, I watched one of the games.
Okay.
It's hard to keep track of which games I'm watching and paying attention to, but I watched today's game, the Yoshinobu Yamamoto start. And what I saw was they ran into a buzzsaw. Now, and the buzzsaw I saw was that they had the Marines batters just made great adjustments. It's like they saw what was happening in the game before Yoshinobu Yamamoto did. He and his catcher were not, I mean, and he was Yamamoto. He's exactly what Yamamoto is. He's got a dynamite cutter. He's got a dynamite four-seam fastball and a pretty good running fastball. And then he's got these secondary pitches, which some days are just electric. And some days aren't. Well, today wasn't one of them. But they had this plan like the pitches are going to work. You know, it's like, oh, here we are last week against Rockton. And so the curveball is going to be great, and the splitter is going to be great, and the slider is going to be useful. Well, they weren't. He couldn't locate them. He couldn't command them. The fastball and the cutter were fine, but he kept trying to set up his breaking balls that weren't working by throwing the cutter out of the zone and trying to get people to chase. And the Marines came, and the umpire didn't help. The umpire gave him a fairly small target. And the Marines were going, throw strikes, bub. Because when he threw strikes, they couldn't hit him. Well, of course, you know, I mean, early on they couldn't hit him because they were still thinking, you know, he might be throwing that curveball or something. They had to keep that there. But he kept getting fancy and he kept falling behind in the count. And it was like, you could see the Marines hitters were a step ahead of him.
It seemed like, yeah, they were sitting on some pitches. Yeah, definitely.
I don't know if they were sitting, but they were saying, okay, if it's, you know, if we're not going to hit it, we're not going to hit his cutter. If it's on the edge for a strike. So just anything, any hard stuff away, we're just going to let it go and hope for the best. And he couldn't find this, you know, he couldn't command it. He couldn't hit the zone with him when he tried to get guys to chase. The curve was nothing. The slider, I think he got one strike, and then the fifth inning with the slider, he didn't throw it a lot anyway, but I saw six or seven and they were all missing badly. And the splitter was nothing. I mean, it was just useless. He threw a couple of good ones. But they were ahead of him. He wasn't. He and Kenya Wakatsky's catcher. And I say this. I say with ultimate respect. These guys are really good at what they do. I could never do it. I can only say this is how it appeared to me. I'm not saying I know this is what happened. I just want people to know that, because I don't know what's going through their minds.
Sure.
I don't have to compete for a living in this respect. So it just looked like the Marines were figuring things out faster than the Buffaloes were.
Right. And obviously, there was talk on Twitter and in the news, on the news report I saw about the Takahiro Okada error. I think it was in the second inning
that
led to a run. And then there was the bad rundown that they almost threw away. And then, but the thing to me was, the kid A-Rod, Adelan Rodriguez slaps a single to left field, and they had a pinch runner, Kodai Sano, in there, and he's at second base, and there's a single to left field, and yeah, it was left field, but you just go. I mean, the ball wasn't hit all that hard. It got through. The throw ended up being terrible. He would have walked home, but he stopped. He stopped, and he was the go-ahead run, so they tied it at 5, and they end up giving up a home run to friend of the program, Brandon Laird, and they lose the game. So, I mean, they're just, I said bumbling earlier, and they just seem to make that, just like the Dragons who flood the bases with runners and can't get that one hit to get them over the top, the Buffaloes make sure to make that one play to send them crashing out. And I don't know that it was one play in any particular play today. There were lots to point to. There always are when you win or lose their games.
Game, but I think, and I don't want to take credit away from the Marines because I thought they played a masterful game. Other than the relief pitching in the eighth inning, when it was like,
true,
let's throw out the B team and see if they can, give them some experience in a tied, in a tied game or in a close game.
Well, that's the one thing I always say is we don't know what the plan is a lot of times, and we're not sure who has.
And
I think guys had thrown a lot in that series. They had used a lot. And I think it was a situation where they probably had to go with the other.
Well, Iguchi did say he was giving some guys a couple days off, a time off in the bullpen with Monday coming up. And I think that's intelligent. But what I want to point to is the at-bats that the Marines had. And also, I have to tip my hat to Manabu Mima because he was Manabu Mima out there. He learned in the first inning that his fastball was not crisp.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically from the first inning, he didn't throw his fastball in the strike zone. He threw that running fastball he's got. He threw a couple of his two-seamers that he throws. But it was pretty much he executed his splitter and his curveball and his slider in the zone. And he made sure, good arm action. He got the ball to move in the zone. But that's
right,
what they had to hit.
And just like they talk about professional hitters, I don't think Mima is a great pitcher, but he is a professional pitcher.
Man,
he's really good at figuring
today.
Things out.
He didn't have a lot. He didn't have a real good fastball. But he really got the job done, and Oryx didn't respond as quickly. I mean, didn't respond as quickly to their opportunities as the Marines did. And I think that's credit to the Marines. And I have to tip my cap to Tatsuhiro Tamura, the Lotte catcher. Fabulous game this guy had. Great, four great at bats. I mean, he went up there in one at bat when Yamamoto was struggling, and he went up there. It's like you could see, if he throws me anything hard anywhere near the zone, I'm going to foul it off.
I'm going to foul that ball off.
That's what he was doing. He was up there to foul the ball off. And
that's funny.
And he got, I think, a 10-pitch walk because eventually he threw three out of the zone.
Yeah.
And that set up, that contributed to a big inning, and then he had a couple of hits, and I was so impressed with the Marines in that game.
Yeah, and I wanted to discount the Marines early on because I saw this coming. I think two-thirds of the way through, I think I tweeted to Jason, and I said, we're two-thirds of the way there to the sweep. And I didn't really like the way things were going, but I always knew Yamamoto was the ace basically in the hole, and I was going to hold out until Sunday. And, I wanted to discount what the Marines were doing. I'm like, yeah, they're winning all these games in a row, but they're playing the Buffaloes. So let's not get excited about this. But they didn't just play the Buffaloes. They outplayed the Buffaloes.
Yes.
The Buffaloes contributed to their losses, but the Marines in some cases forced them or took advantage of them or were leading anyway. So
yeah,
in the case of this base running thing.
So. There's some interesting things I've seen. One of the shifts, I was going to write about it, and I haven't done so yet, but one of the shifts I've seen has been towards, I guess, the Alex Ramirezification of Japanese baseball, which is, let's put our best hitters in the number two spot.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was wanted to do. That was just for you listeners. I had that on our topics for last week, but I took it off because I knew we were going to go over. And I didn't put it on this week, but maybe we can discuss it next week. I think that's a good topic because
yeah,
I've been seeing that a lot.
But I was looking and I'm going, okay, 12 teams, basically six guys have power hitters batting second.
Yeah.
And
let's talk about it next week.
Yeah. And a couple teams are in between, but Oryx is one of those, Oryx and SoftBank, and is those guys who still like fast middle infielders who can bunt.
Right. Yeah, let's talk about it next week. So
okay.
We do have to move along here, mm-hmm. but I did want to mention that. And so the eight wins in a row by the Marines, kudos to them. And they're going to play their next six-game series against the Eagles up in Sendai, so that should be fun.
Should be.
Also want to congratulate the Lions for taking the series against the SoftBank Hawks. Led by Hotaka Yamakawa's five home runs in that series. Man, he just messed them up. And he's looking to take over for
the first three-game series when they were, their offense was looking like they borrowed it from the Dragons. Can we borrow this for a second? We're trying not to hit. Trying not to score runs. We're going to lure people into a false sense of security.
Yeah. All sense of security. So yeah, good job by them. All right, and one note: the Yomiuri Giants acquired veteran infielder outfielder Zealous Wheeler for left-hander Shun Ikeda from the Rakuten Eagles this past week. And Ikeda's a guy; he's done just poorly enough to be almost invisible on the top team, 62 games in his career, and I really can't recall seeing him pitch in anything significant. And then Wheeler is a sixth-year import in MPB who has – he's got 553 hits, including 106 homers and 94 doubles.
Hall of Fame, man.
And 345 RBIs. And basically, you know, is used to playing in different positions, playing in different situations, pinch hitting. So it's a good pickup for them. And I heard somebody say the Giants just wanted to get him because they figured he was going to be available with Stefan Romero playing well at Rakuten, Jabari Blash, and the pitchers that the Eagles are using. So they figured somebody was going to be out. And the Giants wanted to get him because they just wanted to make sure they had a backup plan in case somebody got injured.
Yeah, Jason Koskrew made that comment, you know, it's kind of with the COVID, I thought that was astute, with the COVID-19. So the Giants are one of the teams that typically reloads in the summertime.
Uh-huh.
You know, they look around, see what available talent is not being used in the States, what they can pry loose and what they can stick on the farm team and, you know, for when the next guy they expect to fails.
Sure.
And so that there's that. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of Stefan Romero, but
right, he's kind of injury prone. Yeah,
he gets the freakiest of injuries. It's like I swear he's like I don't know what fate ill fated or something. And I don't mean this personally. I love you to death. I think you're just one of the kindest and most gracious people who play.
Great guy.
Baseball.
Yeah, we love talking to him.
And I wish you the best. But you know that has happened. That it's like out of the blue, bam. So if I'm the Eagles, I'd have Zealous around. But on the other hand, they've also got a zillion outfielders. So
right, you know. Right. And with Daichi Suzuki, they've got an extra infielder. So yeah, they're looking good. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this is from Paul in Calgary. Thank you very much, Paul. He says, with the MLB draft being just five rounds and the max signing bonus for undrafted guys being $20,000, isn't this a great opportunity for MPB to offer some of these guys $100,000 to $200,000 and bring them overseas? any word on this happening? Jim?
No. No word.
Thank you.
It is a yes. It is a golden opportunity. Well, okay, it's a silver opportunity. Because of the limit on the number of players they can use, there's no point in, you know, flooding the minor league system with imported players. Unless you're the SoftBank Hawks and you've got unlimited supply of, you think you have unlimited supply of cash and places to, you know, and rooms in your dormitory for them. Okay, but the big thing, the big obstacle is not the money. The big obstacle is, as John has, again, being very astute here, the big obstacle is we don't do this. This is not our, you know, the front offices, I'm sure that some of these teams have had conversations about this.
Sure.
I would think.
Short ones.
Yeah, no, but I'll bet you the Giants have had long conversations about this. I'll bet the Cebu Lions, the Hiroshima Carp, maybe not the Hiroshima Carp because they've got their wagon all fixed. But the Dragons, I mean, they probably all had conversations and then they said like, hey, if this was a good idea, we would have done it before. This mm-hmm. is not what we're here for. You know, or some other answer of this is not our job. They would have found excuses not to do something new. The
yeah,
teams
I
that could do it don't want to do it because it's like asking the farm director, we're not going to pay you any more money, but we're going to give you about 20 extra hours of work a week next year. How do you feel about that? I think we shouldn't do it. I think we're good without it.
Yep. That would be the answer for most of those guys, I would imagine. Yeah. They got enough on their plates already. Yeah. I thought this would be an option, but when you think about the timing of the way the draft went and all those things that happened with you know, COVID and our lockdowns over there, I thought many players simply, you know, might choose the college route anyway,
but,
and they don't want to travel overseas either.
But
just because of the timing of this thing.
But having said that, Carter Stewart Jr. didn't come. You know, it was a long process for him to come. He had to negotiate with the Braves. He had to, you know, he had to listen to their nonsense. He had to file.
Right.
He had the Players Association file an arbitration on his behalf. He had to wait for the results. He was committed to that long call, that long drawn out battle, and it wasn't until everything, all the tumblers in the lock fell into place that he ended up in Fukuoka.
Yeah.
What I suspect is there will be guys who think they should be playing pro baseball this summer, and they're not because A, teams aren't drafting them, and B, there's no minor league baseball, perhaps. There may be no major league baseball, perhaps, and that when things settle, when things settle and Japanese teams start looking around to see who wants to play, then it might happen. But there's another huge obstacle. I wrote about this about a month ago, right at the Major League Draft. One of the obstacles is the fact that Japanese teams do not have overseas amateur scouts. Except for the guy, you know, except for the whoever guys the Carp are looking to round up who's available in the Dominican. And the Carp don't even right now focus on amateurs so much anymore like
mm-hmm.
they used to. They're basically
right.
looking for retreads, guys who have washed out of the minor leagues. So basically none of these teams have amateur scouts. Carter Stewart was an accident. He was a neighbor of one of their professional scouts. So, that's a problem. If you don't have the guy on the radar, you've got to send one of your pro scouts to look at him. You got to send the Japanese guys to look at him. And so I think wasn't something that was going to – as much as I imagined it might be, it wasn't something that was going to happen in June. But it is something that's very likely to happen between now and December.
Okay.
Is that they'll pick some targets and go out and look.
Yeah, I was thinking this is in line with the Carter Stewart Jr. situation or his method or his
mm-hmm.
way of making it over here. But he was a highly touted prospect, so I don't think you can just be a guy out there who doesn't have a lot of fanfare behind him and then make the move. There's a lot of space. I mean, he might be a parallel move with Carter Stewart Jr., but there's a lot of space between the two parallel lines.
Well, I saw one that was really interesting, which was a guy whose father pitched in Japan for the Kintetsu Buffaloes was one of these guys who probably would have been drafted, and he went back to university in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, Yeah.
But, yeah, MPB generally is not looking for projects who they have to devote resources to financially. And so, you know, the thing with Carter Stewart and a six-year deal with him and the fact that he's kind of committed to that long is good. But if you're coming over here and you're a young player who's unproven, how long is the team going to sign you for, and how long is it going to give you time to develop and all those things? It's a really difficult process. I don't think it's that easy. So I don't think Japanese teams are so interested in that. And you have to be high on the, you know, as in terms of what Carter Stewart was a highly touted prospect.
Well,
and then saying,
having said that, the cost of highly touted prospects is very low right now.
Yeah, certainly you might be able to get a bargain basement price.
You can get some top talent for bargain prices if you're interested. And I think this is going to happen as the season wears on, especially because of, I think it's very likely that one or two guys who were not drafted or did not sign will end up in Japan by next year, but I wouldn't put it more than two and maybe one and maybe none, but I think it's likely that we'll have at least one guy.
All right. I don't even know where you're at now. 0, 1, and 2. Those are the numbers I heard. Which one is it?
0, 1, or 2. And I think it's about a 50-50 chance we'll have one.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot, Paul, for the question. Anyone else who has a question, a comment?
And even people who aren't from Canada are welcome to join.
That's true. Hit us up via email at yakyujohn@gmail.com, on Twitter @JBWPodcast, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Great games coming up this week. Great past week of games. I'm just glad we still have games. Guys, you're young virile men, but, you know, stay home. So we can see this baseball season to the end. All right. Enjoy your baseball.
And see you at the ballpark and at jballallen.com. Ciao.
Follow the host on Twitter @JBWPodcast and @JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with #HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.